Well, good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is the Copyright Forum. And joining us, the all-star panel, Paul Rapp, Holly Law, and Bill Westwood. They are here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, your art, whatever. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. If you have an intellectual property question, now is the time to call. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, jot it down on the back of your hand or something, 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff here in 97 degree Studio A for today's program. Yes, we like to keep it as warm as the canal zone for this panel because we have a great copyright forum for you. Paul Rapp is here. He's an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, mug makers, businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland, of all things. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. It's a long introduction. It's warm in here. Let's try to stay awake. Paul, Bill, and Polly, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
So nice to have you here. Our number is 800-348-2551. If you at home have a question about intellectual property, 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. This was breaking news at the end of last month. You can't copy the taste of cheese. Did you see this story?
No.
Yes, it's true. This is actually in Europe, so maybe you can copy the taste of cheese here in the States. But a Court of Justice of the European Union handed down the judgment. One cheesemaker sued another because they said their rival's product tasted the same as theirs. And it's funny.
Imagine that.
It's funny, but it does have ramifications for, like, perfume makers and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Probably.
You can't copy a scent if you can't copy taste.
You can reverse engineer stuff, so... You know, as long as you don't hold yourself out as being confusing to the...
So you're not that interested in the vast cheese show prep I did for this? Because that's about it, frankly. That's all I got.
Cheese.
Well, it'll just be a few moments before Trump pulls us out of the Berne convention. So
you're listening to Radio Free Cheese.
Don't copy the cheese. All right, let's go to the phones. 800. I'm going to turn the heat down.
Getting cheesy. 800-348-2551
is the number here on the Copyright Forum. Arthur and Pauling. Arthur, you're on.
Yes, I want to know, can you copyright both a work of literature and a musical composition on the same copyright application?
No.
Unless the work of literature is the lyrics to the song, but it doesn't sound like that's what you're asking.
They're all separate.
Each application has to be in its own medium. They all have to be the same medium on an application.
And if they're not, Paul's right.
Okay. If they're not, Paul's right.
No.
Well, Arthur,
Paul's
thank
right.
you. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go on over to Tony in Chester. Tony, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, folks.
Hey.
My son started a aerial photography drone business, so he takes a lot of pictures, and some of them he sells. Some of them he posts on social media, and he puts what he calls a watermark on there with his business name. Is there anything he has to do, to protect those pictures he takes? Because somebody could just copy it off of social media and reprint it. Is there anything he has to do to keep those from, being used inappropriately, by people who shouldn't be using them, in other words, when they're his?
Primarily, he should register them, and primarily and secondarily, he should put a copyright notice on them. You can if.
Oh, okay. So is that something you have to do through a lawyer? Or?
No. No. For No. No. For photography, you can register up to 750 images in one
registration.
Thank you. And
No kidding.
Yeah. So now, in terms of.
And you go to copyright.gov.
Yes.
And set up an account with their electronic filing system. They take they take credit card payments, and you can do a, is 750 is the,
yeah 750 is the
new?
Number.
Yeah. That
well,
been
that's
that
the existing one. That might be changed in the near future, but that was current a few months ago. So,
but you can just upload JPEGs. They don't have to be particularly high res, and it'll be a $55 filing fee.
And just so you know, when they ask for a deposit, that's not money. That's the image. That's a point of confusion all the time among people who aren't familiar with registration.
Also, make sure that your son, when he does this filing, you know, he'll maybe call it Aerial Photographs 1999 to 2018.
Right.
He should keep a separate listing of all the images so that if he needs to, he can go back and quickly find the image under the filing and say,
this
registration covers this image.
And you really ought to try to register it certainly within several months of it being created. I would recommend that you get it registered before you put it on
any social media
site, because once you do that, it's gone.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay.
But thank you very much. But isn't the act of putting it on the social media site evidence enough that you created it?
No.
It's not a matter of you created it. It's a matter of giving you legal protection through registration. If there's a lawsuit, you will be challenged on whether or not it's yours, in all likelihood. At least I've always been challenged in that way.
Yeah.
But I think that, and Paul is more qualified to speak to this than I am, but it really has to do about being able to have leverage to get payment from somebody who infringes your work.
Yeah, and don't go crazy if people are sharing it on their personal social networking sites. That's kind of the idea, you know. But if somebody's using it for a commercial purpose, if somebody's using it on their commercial website, if a car dealer suddenly, you know, has that's when you go after them.
Just make sure your notice is on the image itself.
Right, and the correct form of notice is a copyright symbol, the date. 2018, for example, and your name, in my case, it'd be just Westwood.
Or the name of your company.
Yeah. I personally, I've run into some questions about whether it's better to register it in the name of your company or your personal name.
I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. They're both entities.
Except the name of your company can change over time.
It can.
Yeah.
So you know, put it in your own name. But I don't have a great deal of, you know, how many times have you changed your business name?
Twice, actually, over 40 years.
You go.
Well, our number here is 800-348-2551. The number is 800-348-2551. It's a copyright forum with Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law. And let's jump over to Thomas in Albany. Thomas, you're on.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have song lyrics that I wrote to a Duke Ellington arrangement, and I don't know how to go about copywriting the lyrics. I heard copyright.gov in the previous caller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the second question is, if I was to ever generate money from that, how would that work? I would have to pay Duke Ellington something for the chord structure. I'm not sure.
Well, you're going to have to.
You know, it's a little different than.
Yeah.
Than photographs, where you know, the lyrics is one aspect, and then the melody. Song structure is another.
It's a derivative work of the Ellington tune. So you need, in order to record and release that, you'd need to get their permission. You'd have to contact their publishing company. And I don't know.
I see.
And depending on the song, Billy Strayhorn might might be involved as well. I don't know. But you'd need to get their permission in order to commercially release it. You know, maybe that'll change in time, but you could just figure out who Duke Ellington's publishing company is and send them a request and send them the lyrics and ask them. And be aware they can say no.
When will that fall into the public domain?
Well, he didn't die until the 70s.
Yeah, so it's going to be
a long time.
It's going to be a while. The public domain's set to start growing again, you know.
Why?
Yeah. Because the Mickey Mouse Copyright Act.
Oh, that's right.
I think
the
next
extension
year.
Extension period is over.
So every year you'll get another, you know, I think it's this year. All of a sudden, all the works that were initially published from 1923 to 1924 are going to fall into the public domain, and every year it's going to grow a little bit more. The public domain has been static now for 40 years or so. Yeah. I mean, something ridiculous.
And why was that?
Because of the Mickey Mouse copyright extension.
And so Disney exerted some political pressure?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Congress turned around and extended everybody's copyrights for everything.
Yeah.
By 20 years.
Officially the Sonny Bono copyright extension.
Yeah, I was about to say, it was Sonny Bono.
But Mickey was pulling the strings back there.
All right, well, the beat goes on. We need to take a break here. It's the Copyright Forum, 800-348-2551 is the number. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, Polly Law here to answer your questions. We'll be back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's the Copyright Forum on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, Polly Law are here, and you are there, so you should call here, 800-348-2551. You had mentioned uploading materials to copyright.gov. Do any people still send in hard copy? Can you still do that?
You can. It's more expensive.
Really?
They're trying to punish you for doing that.
Well,
for deposit copies, though, if your work has already been published in a physical medium, you have to send them two copies, which is a pain in the neck.
Yes.
I wonder who makes the decision what they keep, though, because they don't keep all of it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of the deposit copy was when they formed the Copyright Office, they decided that they would have a massive library of everything that's published in the country.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, you know, and
I just picture the X-Files where the guy's walking down
the end of the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Exactly.
And that's about it.
Yeah, and so where do they put it all?
In dumpsters.
Yeah.
No.
Warehouses.
Really?
A lot of it.
Warehouses in West Virginia. I mean, I've had people that have had stuff registered for years, and then they call the Copyright Office and ask them to do a search. You know, can you find what I deposited?
Are they climate control conditions? Because what if I sent something to them 40 years ago
and the roaches have eaten all the...
Yeah, or mildew and everything and it rendered it impossible.
Unless it's on archival materials.
Or you had it on magnetic tape, you know, which anything that was on magnetic tape from the 60s to the 80s, you have to bake.
Right.
Because it's gotten soft. And
The old kinescopes of my old TV show, I can't copyright those.
I would assume that maybe someplace like the Smithsonian goes through every once in a while and says, we'll take care of that. We'll hold on to that for you.
I wonder.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, let's go back to the phones now, and we'll go to Donna in Woodridge. Donna, you're on.
Hi. Hello, panel.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask if you could talk about the expression, you can't copyright an idea. My father was a writer, and he used that expression several times over his career, and I'm just curious what it meant. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, years ago, when the Guild was trying to forestall the imposition of work made for hire legislation, they did a demonstration. They asked a number of prominent illustrators to do an illustration of a man and a woman in a farm layout. The man is holding a pitchfork. The woman is very primly dressed, and they are standing in front of a farm building. I mean, basically, they were describing Grant Wood's American Gothic. They asked, right. I think, 15 illustrators, and they got back 15 different images. So the idea was the description of American Gothic. But each of those different interpretations of that idea were eligible to be registered as their own expressions of that idea.
Protected by copyright.
Protected by copyright.
Yeah, and ideas are not protectable, you know, under any theory, but the expression of the idea is, which is exactly what Polly was just talking about. I mean, if ideas were protectable, if somebody could take an idea and just lock it up, basically the forward motion of society would fundamentally come to an end. And so, you know, coming up with an idea is great.
Sure, Donna, go ahead.
Part of the original item that was created is altered slightly and therefore would be original, maybe the 16th copy of American Gothic, would that also be entitled to a copyright, or would that be an infringement on the original idea?
Potentially, but it could also be considered a derivative from the original idea and still protected.
Not a derivative of the original idea.
I mean,
the original artwork.
I misspoke.
Yeah, the original expression.
Yeah, sorry.
And people ask me all the time, well, if I change 15% of this painting, it's mine, right? And I'm like, 15% of what?
Yeah.
You know, what are you talking about? Color? You know, real estate? You know. The answer is no. And copyright, what constitutes infringement is kind of necessarily a very vague concept. It's if, you know...
The man on the street.
Yeah, the reasonable person, you know, would feel that they took too much of the protectable elements of the original work.
All right, Donna, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. With Polly Law, Paul Rapp, and Bill Westwood. If I could just double back for a minute to our caller before the break who was writing lyrics to a Duke Ellington song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Duke Ellington chord progressions are usually fairly unique. But what about a standard chord progression? How tough is it to enforce something like that if it's a 1-4-5? Or for instance...
My Sweet Lord.
Well, that's a case, but some of these jazz guys, they would take, you know, Jada or How High the Moon, and then they would put bebop on it. And I don't see any, I see Charlie Parker on there, but I don't see anybody else.
Well, you know, ask Steve Miller. The Steve Miller Band. I mean, he had like 10 straight hits. There were nothing but cops of other people's songs. But, you know, chord progressions generally are not protectable unless they're incredibly unusual. Although all of this is kind of up in the air from the Blurred Lines case, you know, where the Marvin Gaye estate claimed that, what's his name there, and Farrell and... stole the feel of a Marvin Gaye tune, you know, and they said, well, yeah, I mean, we wanted to make a song like the Marvin Gaye tune. But, you know, no lyrics similarity, no similarity in the melody. And the jury found that it was infringement.
So they were.
And the jury never should have been given the question. The judge should have decided it. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is so popular with our president, agreed, you know. So now
Will that go any higher?
I just read that there was a payout, so I don't think they're going to take it to the Supreme Court.
I think there was a payout.
Just this week,
which is
a shame because all of a sudden you've got this, you know, you've got this precedent on the books, which is horrible. I mean, no real copyright lawyer thinks it's a good. Yeah. It was a good decision.
It was trade dress then, not copyright.
You can't get trade dress and sound.
No, I know, but that's what they were trying to.
Kind of, yeah. It's the same kind of. You know, just horrific, but, you know.
Mm. Well, let's go back to the phones. The number is 800-348-2551, and Kevin in Oneonta. Kevin.
Thank you for taking my call. The question is, I'm compiling an anthology of poetry. I'm doing this not to sell or publish. I want to give it as a gift, so I want to make about 50 copies. Does it have contemporary poets in it? What's the copyright law for an item you're not selling but you're distributing? Anthology of poetry.
Well, technically, technically, you're not supposed to do it. Now, Paul can comment on whether or not it's worth the risk.
Whenever we start a sentence with technically, it means go ahead and do it.
A friend of mine who's a writer said, even though technically you can do it, you're being disrespectful to the authors.
Well, if you're doing it for
side of the question.
Yeah, if you're giving it to as gifts for a small number of friends, you know, it's really no harm, no foul, I think.
But what if it ends up, what if one of the guests, let's say, is incredibly disrespectful and sells it at a used bookstore?
Then it just don't put your name and address on it.
Put a note on it saying, please don't.
I actually was going to use a covering of a bag, a grocery bag as a cover, sort of this illicit thing. How about if I taught a course? I did teach as an adjunct. How about if I put something together like that for my students?
For your students?
How many students?
Let's say I was an adjunct and had 24 students in my class. So what if I put together an anthology of poetry, not to sell, but to use in my class? I mean, technically, should I?
Bill's shaking his head.
No, that's actually allowable under the Copyright Act. If it's a one-time, if you do it year after year after year.
Yeah, I was just about to say, if you make that part of a course pack that you do year after year after year, then...
That's a textbook.
Then you're in violation of the Teach Act.
But if you just do it once, or if you change it every year,
right.
You're going to be okay under the Teach Act, which is part of the Copyright Act.
You know, put together a collection of 24 poems that are in the public domain.
Well, that's an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
You could seek out the poets and ask them permission. Last I checked, they weren't charging really high royalty rates.
Yeah, send some absinthe or whatever.
Yeah.
The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Steve in Richmond. Steve, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions about musical copyright and registration. I have over the years written several art songs, some of which I have copyrighted and registered. And now I'm thinking about putting them together in one collection and registering that collection. I understand that I can do that and save a lot of money, in one thing. But my second question related to that is, what about the songs that would be in this collection that are already independently copyrighted?
They're not going to check to see if it's been registered already. I mean, I think there's a place on the form where you can tell them it's already subject to protection, but when you're registering a collection, you're registering also the sequence of them,
right.
You know, and the selection of various articles. So, you know, you'll be okay. You might trip a little bit on the registration, but you know, at some point you'll be able to just get them all in and get the collection in as a work.
Right. I'm not aware of the exact form needed. I know that for the individual ones, I use the PA form. So I don't know what's required if I register this collection. Do I have to list each individual selection within it, or just
and if you go online, if you do it online rather than on paper, which is much less expensive and much more efficient, there'll be a series of prompts and they will just direct you to the right form.
Right. They've got a nice tutorial that you can work through to understand exactly what you're doing.
All right, Steve, thank you for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp are here to answer your questions. Jeff in Northampton. Jeff, you're on.
Yeah, hi. This is a question about the use of a video. This is a nonprofit arts organization that has a building that a private architectural firm has done a total renovation on the building. They have hired a video company that has shot a beautiful video of the building, And my question is whether we need permission to use that video in our fundraising portfolio.
I would certainly ask permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. And give the yeah. give the and give the credit, videographer
yeah.
credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would assume to do that as well. I think my question was, if they said no just because they were pugnacious or something, is am I legally bound to that? I mean, is there because they've released it in a public domain already on their website? Am I legally bound?
Yeah. Just because they put it on their website doesn't mean it's in the public domain. It's still their intellectual property, and they still own the copyrights to the footage. You know, you can just go out and shoot your own footage.
Exactly. There you go. Shoot your own B-roll. The number is 800-348-2551. Mary in Delmar. Hello, Mary in Delmar.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hi.
I have a question about the Creative Commons and how it works. It sort of relates to the man earlier who was asking about distributing copies of a bunch of poems not for profit. But this is something that I created, but I'm distributing it to friends and family and telling them they can share it far and wide, but I'd rather not have somebody in that chain take credit for the work, but I don't want them to have to pay me either.
Yeah, and that sounds like you've done an informal Creative Commons license.
Oh, okay.
And mm-hmm. I mean, you can go, and they have different kinds of Creative Commons is an alternative to copyright, where, you know, copyright is very black and white, and Creative Commons, if you want people to be able to freely share your work or to tinker with it, to alter it, you know, to do duets or, you know, whatever, you can. And if you go to creativecommons.org, I think there's a number of different licenses, and it's explained what the restrictions of each one.
You want to make sure. I would suggest that you make sure you don't allow any commercial uses.
Yeah, and ask for ask for attribution.
Right,
you're identified as
the
author.
Yeah, I was going to put something. This is a collection of gluten-free recipes for a new niece-in-law who is also gluten-free, and so I was going to put on, like, page 2, something about Creative Commons, and you can share it, but keep the attribution where it is and don't sell it.
Great.
Are these recipes
like that work?
Are these recipes that you developed?
Yes, over 50 years of being gluten-free, I had a huge collection, so I went through, picked out ones that were my own, and put those all together on online. I mean, in a word processing file. And
sounds like you can make some money on that. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Well, possibly, but it feels to me like it would be more work to do the money thing than just distribute them far and wide. I'll think about it, but in the meantime,
that's what publishers are for.
And so
I see. They would do all the work.
Oh, yeah.
So what you might consider is, rather than a Creative Commons type license, is just copyright the publication. You know, if you want to distribute it to your friends, just give them a little letter that says that they can do this with it or that with it. That way, if you go to a publisher and it gets published, you've got it protected. That's what I would do.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. And copyright.gov is the place to learn to file a registration.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks, Mary.
Good luck.
Good advice. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Hey, you know, it's Vox Pop, and it's the Copyright Forum, and there's still more to come. Paul Rapp is here, Bill Westwood, Polly Law. More of your questions and answers, hopefully, coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's the Vox Pop Copyright Forum, and lucky we are to have this great panel of brilliant folks. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp are here. They've been helping so many people today, and I think we have time to handle many more calls. So let's see how many we can get through here. Debbie in Lenox. Hello, Debbie in Lenox.
Hi. Thanks for doing the show. It's just terrific. Paul is somewhat familiar with my question because I contacted you and you emailed me back. Thank you very much. That was great.
That's a billable hour.
Now you want to see if I'm going to give the same answer, right?
I'm an artist and a local photographer photographed one of my sculptures that was in a cafe, and she put her name across the bottom of it and put it on social media. I understand the only thing I can ask her to do is credit me, which she did not do and she has since done. But can she sell that photograph in one of the galleries that she sells her work in?
And this was a piece of public art. Public art is tricky.
No, yeah. It's different than public art because it wasn't paid for with public funds.
But it was outside.
No, it's inside a cafe, right?
Yes, it's a gallery. It's a local gallery.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw a picture where it was outside.
That was my photograph, yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No.
Know what?
Yeah.
Yes. You know, especially no, she can't sell a photograph of a work.
Okay.
You know, unless it's in there incidentally. I mean, I've seen cases where
it's in the background.
It's in the background. It's a street scene or something. But if it is the featured object in a photograph, it's going to be a derivative work.
I would register it.
Okay.
And I would contact an attorney if I were you.
Mm-hmm. You have his email.
And how much does right? And how much does it cost to register get a copyright?
$55.
Oh, this is one work by one artist, so it's probably going to be $35.
Oh, okay.
If you have other works that you have not registered, I would suggest gang registering them so that you're covering all your bases here.
That's right. $55 for as many as you want.
Yeah.
No, well, not as many as you want. Well, if photographers get up to $750,
that's a lot.
If you're not a photographer, you get fewer, but you can theoretically do a group registration. But like Polly said earlier, you want to identify each image so that you can find it, and so it's looked upon as a separate image and not part of a whole.
All right, Debbie, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Now, will you get something back from the government then that says, okay, you're all set?
You get a nice certificate.
You do.
Well,
oh, yes.
What you'll get first is you'll get a notice that they've received the registration.
And you're considered covered as soon as...
Under most federal districts, not all. New York, yes, fortunately.
What other ones are not?
There's another one that the judge ruled that... It's from the point of actually receiving the registration. And that's...
The artist receiving the registration.
Correct.
Interesting.
No. It's federal law that your coverage goes back to the date you submitted. The question that I think is going in front of the Supreme Court
is when
you can sue.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's when the statute of limitations begins to run. I'm sorry. I'm thinking two different things.
But the question then, and I run in, and every copyright lawyer runs this all the time. Somebody runs in and says, somebody's infringing, and you said, well, are you registered? And they say no. And so you throw in the registration, and the infringement is happening, and you have to wait. Under most territories, you have to wait to get the certificate back, and it can be 5-6 months. I mean, it's taken
or longer.
It's taken them a long time to process these things, and I think one circuit has been holding that you can throw in your application and sue right away, and I think that question is in front of the Supreme Court.
I misspoke.
All right, the number
statute
here
of limitations is like. Oof.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. And now we go over to Mary Jo in Bern. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello, Ray. Thank you very much for this show. I'm always glad to catch it. I just wanted to make a comment that I had successfully registered two literary works through... the Writers Guild site, not because the copyright site was such a bear for me to deal with.
It is.
I went to the Writers Guild. I just wanted to ask the
the panel if they had any comments on using the Writers Guild as opposed to using the copyright.gov site.
Well, it's not the same thing.
The protection isn't the same.
Yeah, your work is registered with the Writers Guild, but if you want to go to court to enforce your copyright, you still have to be registered with the Copyright Office. The Writers Guild's really good for things like television script treatments and stuff. I know a lot of people, you just register in and it creates this record that you created this as of this day. So if somebody steals your idea, you've got that proof. But
you mean this is for those who are submitting things networks,
right.
Let's say.
Yeah.
I understand.
So let me just say, for those people out there who have trouble working their way through the copyright.gov site,
join the club.
But it's not that difficult. There's a book called The Copyright Zone by a photographer whose name is escaping me and an attorney by the name of Edward Greenberg. And they have a shot-by-shot, step-by-step how to register photographs or illustrations.
I'm sorry, The Copyright Zone?
Copyright Zone, Greenberg. Ed Greenberg is one of the authors.
Thanks.
It's a very good reference. And with that and using the copyright.gov tutorials, I really think you would be able to work your way through it. It is a little bit of a pain, but once you get used to it, it's not that difficult.
A nice glass of wine helps.
Yeah, I was just going to say I find bourbon very helpful.
But not too many. Otherwise, you don't know what you're going to copyright.
It takes longer, but it's infinitely more fun.
Yeah, at least one or two. Yeah.
The number is 800-348-2551. Matt in Syracuse. Hi, Matt. You're on.
Hey, how you doing? Paul.
Yeah.
I have a question. In 1982... the Syracuse band 805 signed a record contract with RCA.
Uh-huh.
Currently, that album is now on all the streaming services. I'm guessing some intern was sent back into the archive and started putting stuff up.
And the label put the stuff up.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the label put the stuff up. I'm wondering if, since 1982, the digital rights didn't exist to assign, how they can do that?
You'd have to look at the original recording contract, but it probably said something like released on vinyl records and all technologies known and will be developed in the future. I mean, they probably had some very broad grant of rights. If they didn't,
even in 1982, I mean, it's pre-CD.
Well, yeah, there were cassettes and 8 tracks.
But you had cassettes and 8 tracks and
reel-to-reels.
And the
I realize. And those were enumerated, but I don't think, you know, they covered streaming media, and I don't think they covered the world and elsewhere at that point.
It, like Paul said, a lot of contracts are written to cover
all future
technologies.
But it could,
you need to look at the contract carefully.
Yeah, and it could be the label is being a little fast and loose here. Imagine that. Wow. Imagine a record label being...
I'm shocked.
You're so jaded. All right, Matt, thanks a lot. Good luck. We appreciate the call. Over to...
That was a good question.
Rob in Western Massachusetts. Rob.
Hi, thank you. I had called in the spring to ask the same question, and I lost the information that was given to me. I apologize. I would like to write a book about my grandfather. He was a professional athlete and a humanitarian. And someone from the show had recommended contacting a lawyer way out in the Berkshires who may specialize.
Sorry. He's sitting right here.
Why don't you get whatever advice you can? We really can't do referrals such as this on the air. But why don't you have the lawyer give you a couple of tips here?
I'm out there in the Berkshires, Jerry.
I have a better idea. Can you give me the name of the people that are on the show again, and I can figure it out from there?
Ready? Write this down now, Rob, and I want you to write it in a place that you won't lose it,
and
okay?
My contact information is on the AMC website.
Exactly. Okay. Now, we have Bill Westwood, who's one of the country's leading medical illustrators. That's a guy.
Okay.
Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, and she is here as well. Then there's Paul Rapp, who is an intellectual property lawyer. and writer in the Berkshires.
One of these things is
now
not
you can
like
find contact
others.
Information on the website, and we wish you success, sir, and everything. Michael in Poughkeepsie. Michael, you're on.
Hi. So I used to write a blog for somebody else, but I was writing it. We didn't have any written agreement. And recently I noticed that they had unpublished everything that I had written and republished it verbatim, every single entry over the course of years, under their own name.
Oh,
on the same website. So, one, I wanted to know if I could go back and register one copyright. I guess one of you on a prior question called it I can't remember what you
called it. A gang registration.
Group or gang
registration. Gang registration, right. It's what...
The copyright office. Copyright office calls it a group registration, so you're not confused.
Okay.
Okay. So group. So I could group register all of those old.
If they haven't beaten you to it.
Oh.
Well, even if they have, it's rebuttable. I mean, if he didn't write it, that's a fraud on the copyright office.
Right.
So.
Federal crime.
I think it's got. You know, it's like a.
It's not Michael Flynn level.
Yeah, subject to a penalty of like $1,200 up to $1,200. I mean, no one ever gets fined for that.
Okay.
Rarely. But yeah, you can, and then tell them, you know, as the writer, as the author, you know, you have the right to the copyright and you've registered it, and they should
and
credit you on the blog.
And if they don't agree, then call a copyright attorney.
Got it. And I heard before that, you know, there's somebody on there that out in the Berkshires that might be able to help.
Well, you know,
might be.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires, and he's on the panel here with Bill Westwood and Polly Law.
We've heard of that guy somewhere.
Yeah. Well, good luck, my friend, and we appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Vox Pop Copyright Forum. What fresh hell is this? Don and New Paltz.
They're going to be coming after both of our licenses if this
indeed,
keeps up.
My friend. Hello, Don.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. The concern that I have is I've created a board game, and I Googled to see if anybody else had used the same name for the game, and there unfortunately was somebody else who created a board game back in 1980. It's no longer published. Does that mean I can use the name, or does it mean the name is taken?
That's a trademark question.
That's a trademark question. If you go to USPTO.gov, you can go to
I checked, and there was no trademark tape made for the game.
Nobody registered.
But isn't there also a way to do a trademark that's not listed?
There's a common. I mean, there's common law trademark rights, but you don't. Do you know when they stopped using it, when they stopped selling the game?
It was in the early 1980s.
Okay, well then I think you're good to go. I mean, there's a presumption that, you know, after 3 years of non-use, a trademark is deemed abandoned.
But how can he be sure that it has not been used in some other part of the world?
Well,
it doesn't. The rest of the world doesn't matter.
Yeah.
In terms of trademark,
America first here, Ray.
Yeah, but trademarks are territorial and shouldn't be, but they are. Copyrights are global, but trademarks, unfortunately, as of now, aren't.
All right, Don, carry on.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Good
very
luck.
Much. I think the heat is getting to all of us here. Elizabeth in Greenfield Center. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi there. I run a performance space, a community arts center performance space, and recently I've been getting these sort of nasty ominous phone calls from ASCAP. And I just want to preface my situation by saying I'm a musician. I've been a working musician all of my life. I have relied on royalties. I respect the royalty and all of that, but really I have kids playing their own material. The occasional ironic cover is so seldom that I really take issue with it, and now I'm getting into it with them. So what's your advice?
Continue getting into it with them. Tell them, you know, you're only doing original music, and to go away. I mean, the ASCAP BMI employees that are on the level of sending out all these threatening, they're mostly entry level people who are reading off a script.
Do they get paid by the piece of mail they send out?
Or? I don't think so. The Getty Images people do, but the ASCAP people don't. And so if you just keep pushing back, at some point, you know, in my experience, they'll get tired and go away. Okay, it's annoying, though, because they are threatening, and they are very dogmatic.
They're persistent, definitely.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for that. That's encouraging, because it's just me at the helm here, and it's a little much to keep getting these, emails and calls.
Yeah.
Well, if all else fails, get an attorney to write a letter back to them,
Mm-hmm. Yep. We happen to know
we know someone
lives
in the Berkshires.
For Pete's sake. All right. You know what? This is the last copyright forum. I'm just telling you that right now. Elizabeth, good luck, and we appreciate it. You know, all of you, really. I know it's 100 degrees, but come on. All right, we got one more call here. We have just enough time. As soon as Stan in Poughkeepsie is cleared in the queue here, we'll go over to Stan in Poughkeepsie as soon as he's cleared.
Ray, we can blame it all on the heat.
I agree. Yeah. Just... And the bossa nova. We'll blame it on the bossa nova as well.
The dance of love.
All right, come on, Stan.
Hello, Stan. Just push Stan on over here. There we go. Hello, Stan. Welcome. We've been waiting for you.
How are you?
We got about a minute here, so go ahead there.
Okay, real quick then. I'm a member of a private club, and we got a notice from BMI where they wanted us to send them $500 for the pleasure of us having some live bands around once in a while. And, you know, we were kind of thinking that maybe they were just casting a net and seeing who's silly enough to pay them money. Then I did a little research and find out that's kind of a real thing, that we're actually on the hook for bands and DJs who may play at our club, and, you know, if they haven't received the rights to the music.
We got you. We only have about 30 seconds.
Yeah. If you're presenting music or you're even playing recorded music in a venue, you should be paying songwriter royalties to BMI.
Can you pay a blanket fee?
Yeah, you pay a blanket fee that's an annual fee. I've seen a lot of venues go out of business over this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a salvage yard in Albany that had hootenannies and had hot dog roasts, you know, and they had to stop having hootenannies.
Right.
Guys with banjos, for crying out loud.
Oh, my gosh.
And hot dogs.
Wow. So you're saying someone with a banjo made a dollar?
Not anymore.
Well, don't tell Alan.
Well, that's the end of the show. And now that we've had our shot at banjos, thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here today. Thank you for listening. Support comes from Patricia Dalton Fennell, producer, spotlighting the holiday CD classic Baby It's Cold Outside with Chris Payson, trumpet Armin Donnellian, piano, and Patricia Dalton Fennell, vocals, patriciadaltonjazz.com. The University at Albany Theater Program, offering individualized education within our student-centered theater major to help train theater professionals for the 21st century. albany.edu/theater. Studio KTM Salon Red Hook, specializing in all faces of cut and organic color from corrective to fashion by stylist Kristen Marquette. StudioKTM.com. And Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley in Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectric.net. Thanks again to Bill, Polly, and Paul for being here today. I get the names right. Look, it's 100. All right, give me a break. I've had it. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Susie Chekai took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Time to towel off. Tomorrow on the program, it's Pets and Vets. Carrie O'Loughlin returns right now. Stand by for news.